Alrighty, we're back. Thanks for staying with us. Episode 379. Don't take my stuff, man. We are at a packed studio here. We're about to get in the queue. I understand Jim Powers is our next guest.
Correct.
Shree, are you there?
Shree Tanidar.
Excellent. Fantastic. Thanks for joining us tonight. Welcome to Planet Green Trees. We're glad to have any of the candidates and even more say honored to have someone running for governor. Really exciting. As I'd like to ask some of the candidates first, why in the world would you ever want to run for public office?
You know, I am not a career politician. I am a scientist. I have a bachelor's, master's, and PhD in chemistry. And I ran small businesses for the last 26 years creating jobs. So I'm in the private sector helping create jobs, running small service businesses. And, you know, I'm an immigrant. I immigrated 40 years ago. I became a proud United States citizen in 1988. And I'm so grateful to our great country and the great state of Michigan for giving me the opportunity to achieve my American dream. But you know what I find is that the American dream is fading all over America. And the American dream is fading more so in Michigan than any other place. And I want to help others achieve their American dream. It's time for me to give back. And that's why I sold my business 2 years ago and took some of the money, gave it to all of my employees based on the length of their service, not on their title or position.
Hmm. Wow.
And put money in my campaign and announced my run for governor.
Wow, that's a great story. And I see like there was that was a business that had been challenged in 2010. Or prior to that, the recession of obviously that was plaguing Michigan, really 2008 through 2007 to 2010 and 11 really, but that was something that's brought back from a challenged place, and you're able to turn that around and sell. That's a really great great story.
That I had originally bought a 3-person business, and that business I grew to about 450 employees, but in the recession. Many of my customers who were small businesses went belly up. And actually, bank came and possessed that business, sold some of it, closed some down, and recovered all of their money. And so I had to start all over again in 2010. And I did. I came to Ann Arbor, Michigan, restarted my business, and created 50 good-paying jobs in Ann Arbor.
I hear it. So what do you think the idea is? How's Michigan going to bounce back in this current economy? Like, how do you see the – I mean, you're in a – you know, I see that your background, as you said, you've got a PhD in chemistry, and, you know, despite the academia, you've also obviously have some business sense and are able to utilize those skills and find, you know, a need for those services. Where else do you see development for those – what sector, shall I say, beyond – I mean, service included, if any, that you could think of, or – other types of employment, and bringing jobs back to Michigan?
Well, you know, Michigan used to be pretty much on the top in innovation and research and development. While we are losing some of the manufacturing base, my focus would be creating skill sets. You know, we need to have more education, community college, four-year college, as well as trade schools and vocational training. And I think what really hurts Michigan right now is people can't get good-paying jobs because they don't have the skill set necessary. And as we change technology, as new technology is welcomed, new skills are going to be needed. You know, I met a guy named Todd in Kalamazoo. And he drives trucks all his life. And now he says, you know, with the mobility coming in, and he may not have a job, and he has no other skills. So when people, lose their jobs, they need to have skills, acquired skills, so that they can succeed and, you know, continue to keep their quality of life. And my focus is going to be investing in people. What I've seen last 7 years is a lot of big corporation welfare. You know, Governor Snyder has given away hundreds of millions of dollars to big corporations, and they have no loyalty to Michigan. And my focus is going to be in small businesses, helping people, you know, start businesses, more entrepreneurship. That's my background. I'm a serial entrepreneur, and I think I want to empower people in doing good for themselves, and that starts with education.
Yeah, that seems to be a major problem. We have to invest in our children more. I would agree with that. And you mentioned something that is not talked about that much. It's and I see. You mentioned community college, bringing community colleges back. The challenge, I think, for a lot of people right now is that colleges, you know, beyond the community colleges, or they don't see it, it's still very expensive. And the jobs that are available to people outside of the graduation phase may not even provide for an opportunity to pay off a lot of those debts for many, many years, if at all. You know, I heard one, the guy's a doctor, actually, and he said something, you know, in today's world, unless the kid is going for, like, a professional skill trade where there's, like, a better chance of them having a real job, you know, they're going to spend a couple $100,000 or $100,000. It's almost better to just, you know, give it to them in different segments and let them try to run a business. And if they fail a couple times, that experience would be equal to the amount you might spend in a college education. I just thought that was an interesting situation, especially from a father who's potentially going to give his advice to his kid like that, who wants to go into business or whatnot. What are your thoughts on that, and why is that the right or wrong position?
Well, you know, our education, like you said. Education is very expensive, and education is not a privilege. You know, when I grew up in poverty, education was the ladder for my success. And that ladder is broken for too many Michiganders today. And we have to make education affordable. And it will help our economy, because the more educated people we have, the better resources, skilled resources, businesses will have. And so we need, by making it affordable, we need to make community college free for any family that has family income of $120,000 or less. And we want to make four-year college affordable. And if we do that, then, you know, we take, education should be accessible regardless of a family's financial status.
That's true.
Just like health.
Right.
These are fundamental rights. These are not privileges. And the better we do, you know, the government needs to make it accessible. And that's the only way for growth. That's the only way for us to take our state to the next level, is we have skilled, qualified, skilled people who then, that's how to attract big business to Michigan. And when they come here, they'll stay here.
Sheree, let me put you on the spot for one second.
Chief, Alan, I'm not done. Come in the middle, so maybe just wait.
On this education thing, do you know what the average cost is to keep a person in prison for a year here in Michigan?
Approximately $40,000.
That's correct.
And you know what the average cost of money that's given to a student in a K-12 is? About $9,000.
Right. So it makes a lot of economic sense to do what you're doing, to suggest what you're doing about free college.
We need to do that, and we need to give skill set. Not everybody needs to or wants to go to a four-year college. And in that case, we need to give them a career and technical education, trades education. Mm-hmm. And, locking people up, especially for minor offenses, nonviolent offenses, makes absolutely no sense. And we need to find alternate ways to provide skill sets so that people can return to, the returning citizens can live a productive life and become part of the society in a productive way.
You know, I do understand that you are in favor of legalization and decriminalization and find it offensive that people are getting locked up for that. And that, those are the easy, you know, and you're, you know, this is the choir that you would be speaking to here. But let me expand that, because the education topic has the same challenges, I think, as the vision of a less, you know, of a world that doesn't criminalize the plant of marijuana. And that is, where are those funds that are going to be needed to, you know, provide the education, the free education that you talk about? Where's that going to come from? Because it's got to come from something else. We're not going to create more money out of the tax base to provide it. It's got to be, you know, it's fungible. It's got to come from another program. Something else would arguably have to be cut, I would think, unless you have another idea. And the same thing regarding, like, the cannabis, you know, reduction. I just, you know, in I see so much business, quote-unquote, activity that takes place in my world. I'm an attorney. Go to court. Every docket, any given day in any court, is 50% involving marijuana in some way. The crime lab tests 50% of their budget goes towards testing marijuana, while DNA rape kits stay on the shelves, and nobody does anything about it. So what I'm saying is, the only reason why they do that is because there's so much business. It's producing revenue. If we remove this from that big machine that is so, you know, whatever, where's that money going to come from, or how are they going to be refunded? Just like, where are we going to get the money for the education? I believe in both. I'm just curious, because give me some thoughts on that.
Well, these are all good questions. And, you know, I'm progressive, but at the same time, I've ran small businesses for 26 years, so I have to make payroll every 2 weeks, and I have to balance budget. I can't borrow money and live on borrowed money, so I have to really balance my cost. And so not only when I think about free education or investing in infrastructure, I'm always asking myself the question, where is the money going to come from? And I want to bring a graduated tax system in Michigan, because there's no point, and I absolutely see no reason and no justification to raise taxes on the working poor, the lower middle class, the middle class. But, you know, if you look at corporations, they don't pay their fair share. There are so many loopholes the corporations have worked out with the politicians that they end up paying very little taxes. Same thing goes with the really ultra-rich people. And we need to have tax fairness and redoing the tax fairness, making sure the corporations pay their fair share. Could generate between $1 to $3 billion of additional revenues. In addition to that, if we can, you know, we spend more than $2 billion on our prison system, and a lot of the money goes for nonviolent offenders. And if we can find an alternate way to assimilate them into the society back, we will save a lot of money, and we will put these young people, help them change their life and break this cycle of, you know, revolving door type of thing. We'll adjust that. So legalizing marijuana would generate, I believe, somewhere between $120 and $150 million. And on top of that, I would do some 30-year municipal bonds. And I would use some of the additional taxes coming from the corporations to pay for the bonds. And I'll use all that and invest in people, in people's education. I will invest that into giving skills to people. And I'll invest that in fixing our infrastructure. You know, several counties in northern Michigan don't have broadband high-speed internet. And it's very difficult to, you know, for the students to study, for businesses to run a business without a high-speed internet. We need to take care of the lead lines that are poisoning people with high lead content. And it's not just Flint. There are a lot of other places where there is lead in the pipes. You know, our sewer system is falling apart. Our roads are in terrible condition. We have bridges and waterways that need work. And if we don't invest in our state, then we can't take our state to the next level.
Do you see a world, and this is always the thing, with, you know, do you see a world in the, you know, 4 years and another, or how was it, how many years is it, 6 years? Was it, that's the term, six?
Well, it's four years. Okay.
So let's say two terms is the max. You know, do you see, like, the police budget? I mean, like, it's hard to even address this, but, like, if it's true and you've got, you know, X percentage of the amount of business that the police do or the amount of arrests that they do is eliminated or reduced by 50%, 60% from, you know, whatever it may be. And, you know, does that mean that, you know, where are these police going to go? And my question is, do we find them other things to do? Are they going to be focused on other more serious crimes? Or, you know, and if that happens, if there's less business, is that something that's good for Michigan or bad for Michigan? You know, like if there's less money to employ police because, you know, there's not as much activity that's being paid out by citizens for fines and costs associated with marijuana or, you know what I mean? Where does Michigan stand on that? This is always a existential debate, I think. I know you're with me on that. This may be too much, but let me know what your thoughts if you have one.
Well, you know what? As the economy evolves, technology evolves, and as the economy evolves and technology evolves, what worked last year or last decade isn't necessarily going to work for the next decade. And we got to adjust. You know, manufacturing has changed. We have had automation has come in, and that has changed people's jobs. Some people have lost jobs because of that, and we need to retrain them to do something else. So this is how the economy works. And if this means we need to retrain some people who are currently employed because of the current marijuana laws, we will simply have to help them just like we would help others acquire new skills and new skill sets for them to get ready for the 21st century.
You're right. It's really the same argument that's being used against global warming or, you know, empower the miners because we need more, fossil fuels. We don't need that. We need renewable energy and we need a greener energy system. And the argument says, well, what are we going to do with all these people? Are we going to put them out of work? And the argument is you put them into work into other jobs that are equally right. So I understand it's the same. There's a parallel there in those arguments. I mean, I thought you were gonna actually say that you know, it's like they do in other things. You gotta economy's gotta grow. It's gotta have its own organicness to a certain degree, which means what's that?
Evolution
is involved in that. All right, from a scientific standpoint, what are your thoughts on cannabis being a Schedule I drug?
You know, I would like to treat it like alcohol. I would like to decriminalize marijuana. And, you know, as a scientist, I see the medicinal benefits. You know, there's we have so much of opioid abuse. And the prescription drugs have, for painkillers, has become created an epidemic. And, you know, marijuana could be an alternate to the pain medication that is, there are a number of scientific studies that have shown that there are medicinal effects, good effects of marijuana. And I believe in personal freedom, and by regulating it, I think is the right thing to do.
What do you think about people driving after they've used marijuana?
Yeah. I was going to say like this. Oftentimes when they do legalize, along with that comes a per se number of some kind of, you know, what is deemed per se operating under the influence of marijuana. Do you have any thoughts on that from a scientific perspective? Do those numbers have any meaning? And should Michigan embrace and continue to study this perceived per se number, should they legalize?
Yeah, well, look, you know, you can drink and drive. And so there should be a similar approach. You know, we need to treat it like alcohol. And there needs to be regulations, and there needs to be laws and limits for public safety. Public safety is ultimately essential and important. And I would advocate that everything that we do in legalizing and decriminalizing is done with public safety in mind.
Have there been any studies that have proven that marijuana use impairs someone's driving?
I do not have access to those studies, or I can't recite you something top of my head.
I was actually asking Jamie. I think I was looking at him. It didn't really translate.
Well, you know,
radio,
it's an interesting issue. Listen, it's an interesting issue, and I think that a lot of times there's, I don't know, and you know, it's an interesting topic, and if it, you know, Michigan's going to have to probably decide. They're trying to figure this out now. They're doing some studies. The swab mouthing, you know, in five of the counties. I don't even know.
Impaired driving safety commission is also.
At the end of the day, I think AAA produced a report. AAA Insurance Company, which is, you know, it doesn't really have a dog in the fight, so to speak. And they concluded after, you know, every state, you know, and all the insurance claims and blood draws and things that they were involved with reading reports, they could not say that there was a number. You know, that they could conclude with that was indicative of impairment. It varied too great between individuals, you know. And what they suggested is getting, like, drug recognition experts. But, you know, I'm a defense lawyer. I think that that's, like, voodoo science. You might as well. Like, that's the farthest thing from, like, quote-unquote science. You know what I mean? Where the determination, you know. But I understand it's a challenging situation. I think from a public safety perspective, there's a lot of information or misinformation, and it becomes a power struggle, I think, between law enforcement and, you know, it's an issue of freedom, really. You know, if it's true that they give you back a little piece of it with the possession, you know, able to possess it and ingest it, blah blah blah. You know, anyone in the community advocates driving while impaired. That's not a thing. Nobody wants that to happen, right? But there's a distinction of coming to that conclusion, you know, and if that's something that is prevalent at all, even, you know. But what are your thoughts? Any comment to that?
Well, you know, there are some studies done in Colorado and in California and Washington. We have to take a look at those studies, But that's something that needs to be looked at. But public safety is absolutely critical while we protect personal freedom, and while we relook at this, I think decriminalizing it would be very, very beneficial. It would cut down some of our prison and costs. But it needs to be done with public safety in mind.
Fair enough. What do you think about parents who use marijuana and the protections of child custody?
Well, again, just because they use marijuana is not enough of a reason. But again, there are good parenting and, you know, safety of the child needs to be considered. And as long as child safety is not in danger, then I don't see a problem.
Right, like the whether they use oxycodone, whether they drink alcohol, whether they're prescribed something or smoke marijuana, that's not the basis by which you judge their parenting. It's their actual parenting or whatnot. It's, you know, where we, it's, you know, the, but these are, you know, some of the areas that I think are going to be interesting for the leadership of Michigan regarding marijuana are in these areas. It's going to be in the giving leadership in to driving, You've got the parenting issues. As we're kind of, you know, broaching here, there's employment issues, government housing, government employees.
Well, that's a good question for Shri, is the employment issue. He's an employer. I bet he has an interesting perspective on that.
As long as a person is able to do his or her job competently, so there should be no employment discrimination based on. I'm talking about after marijuana is legalized.
Right.
An employer should not be able to discriminate hiring based on marijuana use, provided that the person and the job that is involved can be done safely and competently.
You know, and a lot of times, I know you're saying for hiring, even more so once they have the job, to be fired just for that. Like, it should have to be some, well, depending on the employment contract, of course, if it's at will versus just cause employee, but if it's for an employee, just cause, that shouldn't be the reason alone, just because they may test positive for marijuana, right? It'd have to be some kind of identifiable behavior that was like the impairment or whatnot, or not functioning right, or
I mean look at alcohol, the same thing.
Right.
If someone is impaired with alcohol and it's interfering with the person's job, that will not be tolerated by an employer. Same way. I think it goes the same way. Regardless of a person's personal lifestyle, what should be judged is based on what the needs of the jobs are, and can the person competently perform the job. And the person should not be discriminated based on their personal life.
And the
personal choices they make.
Absolutely. And we've talked to various candidates. And I think I was at an event, out in, Am I Legal, as I think, sponsored it. It was at a nice restaurant. And Dana was there, it was a while back. But as we look at the, future of things and how this is going to play out, I noticed that, in your economic thoughts, thoughts and perspective, that marijuana could play a tremendous, or cannabis could play a big role in the shift in the economy. And I think, it's interesting, because I think, the governor's thing is going to be more, they ask that question more than, a legislator, I think. I mean, they may have had some ideas, but obviously the executive branch can lead and, kind of corral the, and if you get the right people in the legislature, that's how you get things done, right? But it's really a leadership position of where the economy is going to go, the direction it comes from, the executive branch. There's this other whole thing going on of the hemp, and the whole, Michigan could be a leading candidate in creating this, returning to the, its industrial revolution, putting people back to work, industrializing hemp. And a lot of people understand that, but it's like, we've been far behind with the implementation of the state's program regarding that as well. Is that something that ever crosses your mind to, as a another potential revenue source for Michigan?
Yeah, right now we are heavily relied on the auto industry, and the auto industry is impacted considerably when economy goes south. And it is important that Michigan diversifies, and we encourage other industries, pharmaceutical, healthcare, biotechnology, alternate energy, as well as cannabis industry. This is something where it will help us diversify our economy, and it will make it less dependent on auto. And future growth has to come from service industry, and future growth has to come from technology-based industries. So we need to, we need to diversify, because otherwise, the economic downturn hits us disproportionately. Michigan has a much higher impact of recession than any other state. and we need to, you know, build on that and make, you know, and I, having run small businesses, having gone through and suffered through recessions, you know, I'm battle tested. Whereas, so I think someone with my background, scientific background, my background in business and financial savvy, can do a lot of good to the state of Michigan and to carve out and build a future for us and our citizens. And I you know, I worry about the career politicians who have never created a single job and haven't have no financial expertise, never having run a business, balanced a budget. I worry about someone like that in charge of our state when the next recession comes.
Jamie Lowell wants to ask you a question. Before he does, let me selfishly ask you this. Do you take issue with the following statement or phrase, the Michigan State Police Forensic Science Division? Does that cause you grief or problems?
Well, yeah, you know, and I think we have seen reports where science isn't followed. You know, we've seen reports where, you know, the bureaucracy sometimes overtakes the science. And sometimes innocent people suffer as a result of that. And, you know, as a scientist, being a scientist, I believe in practicing good science. And I believe in data. Data is important. Facts are important. You know, what we hear from Washington, D.C., and through our current president is, you know, so, not really understanding science, not believing and not making decisions based on science.
Or even what facts are. I mean, we know there's no vetting of, you know, what, there's no bar anymore. Like, the, when you, once you throw science out, there's no, like, you know, rules to the conversation to a certain degree. You know, it's like anything goes. All right, that was a great answer, by the way. And you're right, and you knew what I meant, that there's a bureaucracy of science. That's not how it's like. Science is science. They speak the truth. It doesn't change. Policies don't influence. All right, Jamie Lowell, go ahead before we run out of Jim Powers. Goes crazy over there.
I think it's important, Sheree, that we include what I've heard you say in the past concerning your views on if you were to become the next governor of Michigan, you would look at ways of pardoning or creating some avenue to expungement.
Yes.
For those who have had previous cannabis convictions in some circumstances.
Absolutely. I want to look at my powers. I want to see what the law would allow me to do. But it's important that people with minor possession charges and people that are nonviolent offenders, it is important that we give them a second chance. It's important that we give them skill sets so they can do good for themselves, that they can come back to the society and become a productive member of the society. And it's, I believe in giving a second chance for people to do good for themselves and help our communities stronger.
I wonder how many people would be eligible for that kind of, you know, like, let's just say that there was a policy, like, okay, cannabis is legal now, and, you know, I'm opening up this application to a certain amount of, I wonder how many people that would be, like, how many people actually fall in that category, whether it be, you know, last 20 years or whatever, people that would come forward, it'd be meaningful to them to get a felony off the record for, like, a possession with intent to deliver marijuana, where they had, like, you know, some pound, you know, pound or two or whatever, you know what I mean? And he put some kind of thing on it, or plants or something, where they got manufacturing, and it was a four-year felony. That would be interesting. I wonder how many people that could then become eligible for, like, real citizenship. They're no longer second.
Get some existing
citizen.
People out of the jails.
That, but also, you know, open up a workforce, you know, college, you know, opportunities or whatever, you know, loans at least for college. But again, you know, there's always those challenges. But that's not going to be a problem because if Sheree gets into the governor, people are going to be going to community college and get their felonies expunged. They'll be eligible, and we'll have this whole new workforce and they'll become scientists and whatnot. There we go. We got a plan.
We could use it.
Thank you for joining us tonight, and sorry for if we were too tough on you here. You were. We're excited for your.
I enjoyed having this conversation. Thank you for all the things you're doing,
Sheree. If we want to know your website, if we want to learn more about your campaign, what's your website?
Shri2018.com. Shri2018.com.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Have a great night.
All right. You like how I wind those guys up, Steve? Yeah.
Let's just take a little break here and come back, and we're going to talk about some candidates, some updates on what people should be paying focus to, and then we're going to highlight Charmy Golston, also known as Kid Charmy, and we'll be right back.